from KQED.
This is Forum from KQED Public Radio. I'm Mina Kim, sitting in for Michael Krasny. You've been listening to live NPR analysis of an update from the Federal Coronavirus Task Force, where officials were trying to address concerns about testing and gear shortages, as well as giving new information about potential treatment options. We're joined now by Alameda County Health Officer Erica Pond, who has been at the center of the coordinated effort among Bay Area counties to respond to the coronavirus pandemic by calling for people to shelter at home. We're also joined by Tony Eiten, Senior Vice President for Healthy Communities at the California Endowment. He's also former director of the Alameda County Health Department and has been focused on the issues facing our frontline health workers. They're here to take your questions for the next 20 minutes or so. The number to call, 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch on Twitter, Facebook at KQED Forum, or email your questions to forum@kqed.org. Erica Pond, welcome to Forum.
Thank you very much for having me.
And Tony Eiten, welcome as well.
It's my pleasure.
So, Erica Pond, I want to start with you, if I could. So, you know, we are hearing from frontline health workers in the Bay Area. Some San Francisco hospitals, for example, told Kaiser Health News that they're reusing their equipment, face masks that should be tossed after working with patients are actually trying to keep in plastic bags and spraying down to try to kill the virus and so that they can be used again. What is the situation like at Alameda County hospitals with regard to supplies, Highland Hospital, other places like that?
Well, what I can say is I do know we're getting a lot of resource requests from many of our hospitals, and there has been some World Health Organization and CDC guidance about trying to optimize respirators, and, you know, there are situations for airborne diseases where you can reuse them and there's no concern about droplets. So I think similar things are happening as everyone tries to optimize the resources. I have heard that there are more masks that will be ordered and delivered, but on the front lines, it is true that we are all seeing shortages of both regular surgical masks and N95 respirators.
So then it doesn't sound like you're terribly confident that if we do get a surge in patients that the protective gear is going to be available, that you're going to have enough of it to meet the need.
Well, we are hoping, again, that more of this comes down the line soon, and then there are other when you don't have an N95 respirator, if you do need to do something we call an aerosolizing procedure, there are what they call purifying air power respirators that are people can use. You've seen sort of in a lot of the other media from other countries and here, it looks almost like a spacesuit. Those can also be used if you don't have N95 respirators, and I know a lot of our hospitals do have supplies of those, and those are equipment that can be reused and appropriately cleaned in between use.
Well, Tony Eiten, I know that the California Endowment has been looking at how clinics and private practitioners are holding up. Can you talk about the situation there?
It's been a real challenge. We've heard from a lot of our clinic partners in the Central Valley, up in the northern part of the state, and also in the Inland Empire in particular, where they're describing absolute shortages of personal protective equipment and many of the resources that they need to be able to just manage on an outpatient basis patients that are presenting with flu-like illnesses. So we're working with others to respond. We've put $5 million into a fund to try to address particularly vulnerable populations and the needs of vulnerable populations, and we understand that the way to reach vulnerable populations is through the organizations that serve them, that know them best. So our community clinics are right up there as a first priority to support them, to support the patients that they're seeing, as well as many of the not-for-profit organizations around the state that are dealing with homeless families and individuals and dealing with day laborers and farm workers and other vulnerable populations. So this is an immediate need that we're responding to with other foundations, and we see this as the first phase of a response that will ultimately have multiple phases because we expect that this will continue for several weeks, if not months.
So just a couple of follow-up questions around that. I mean, even homeless shelters and you know, areas that serve farm workers, they themselves say that they lack, you know, basic protective gear, hand sanitizer as well, things like that. And so are you saying that you are trying to work with these entities to get them those kinds of supplies as well?
Yeah, well, we're
or is it more broad than that?
Mm-hmm. You know, what we have is money. And flexible money. So we try to make those resources available to people for whatever purpose they see fit in this immediate instance. We have heard from virtually all of our partners about this shortage of personal protective equipment, you know, for a variety of different uses. And, you know, we have been working, you know, I've been in conversation with Erica and other health officers around the state to try to understand how their process for triggering the allocation of personal protective equipment that's in California stockpiles, that's in federal stockpiles, and typically those stockpiles are accessed through the emergency operations centers that exist at every county. So we're trying to make sure that that mechanism is working, and Eric can obviously speak to that in more detail. But we're finding that folks are being rebuffed in those systems and are, you know, they can't find the equipment that they need from their typical suppliers. They can't get it through their county emergency operations centers. So they're really kind of concerned that they're going to run out and not be able to continue operations.
Well, we've got caller Molly on the line. She's in Oakland, and I understand she's a nurse. Hi, Molly. Join us.
I'm so sorry. I think I was going to ask the same question that everyone's asking, which is basically what to do with the shortage of PPE, but it sounds like I think it's been answered. So thank you so much for answering my question as well.
Well, thanks, Molly. But I just do have a follow-up, Dr. Pond, on this. So, yes, if the supply isn't quite there yet. I mean, we heard Vice President Pence say that, you know, masks, for example, will be more available after he's had some discussions with private sector companies like Honeywell and 3M. But how are you going to be able to get your hands on things, you know, in the meantime? Is it the state stockpile?
Yes, and we have been accessing the state stockpile and distributing that as well. And to speak briefly to the process that Dr. Eitan was mentioning, we do have our Emergency Operations Center activated, and we have a website, and I can send the link later, where clinics can do a formal resource request, whether it's for masks or N95 respirators or, you know, I've heard also face shields and gowns are becoming in short supply. To submit those resource requests, and then we go through the, we call it the Standardized Emergency Management System, and we first look to our own stockpiles, and then we request it through the state, and then the state has been requesting from the Strategic National Stockpile, and hopefully per this other federal announcement of more coming down. So that is the process, and we do, you know, hope that that can get to us quickly. We do, you know, things are coming. I think getting them on the ground and operational seems to, of course, always take longer than all of us hope. So I do hope that all of these resources do come quickly, and because we are certainly one of the epicenters here in the Bay Area and one of the first areas to be hit with the first cases.
And Dr. Pond, the shelter-at-home orders and other social distancing measures are, of course, to avoid an inundation at these hospitals to slow the rate of infection, of COVID-19 infection. Are people in Alameda County heeding the orders?
So I would say on a very broad level, I do see a dramatic decrease just even visibly. You know, I live here in Oakland and work in Oakland, and I do think the vast, you know, majority of people are heeding these orders. I think certainly there are some businesses and others that we are starting to hear about, and we're going to be having conversations about what level of enforcement, you know, we can and should do as a health officer community here in the Bay Area. Again, I think we've made a dramatic change in the opportunities for person-to-person interactions, which is absolutely the goal. We certainly want to prevent any large organizations from having people that are not in these essential government functions or essential businesses. But I do think that the vast majority of people are, and I really appreciate the community coming together, because we absolutely recognize the difficulty that this this order has caused people, and we're also very conscious of the impact on small businesses. But again, as you said, we really do want to protect our healthcare system and those who are most vulnerable to serious illness.
Well, Steve asks, if someone has a prior stock of things like N95 masks for construction and the like, who is accepting donations?
Oh, that's an excellent question. I mean, we would be happy to receive them through our Emergency Operations Center and help reallocate them to healthcare workers or people that are requesting them. Maybe I can send KQED some contact information after if people are able to donate. That would be amazing.
Yes, that we will definitely take that and try to post that. Let me go to more calls coming in because I know we only have both of you for about 10 more minutes. So Alexandra in Napa, join us. Hi, Alexandra.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. So
my question is,
I'm a patient in a forensic mental hospital in Napa County, and they're not observing the stay at home order, and they're meeting in greater than 10 people. They're really not following. I'm wondering how to put pressure on the administration to really follow the stay at home shelter in place orders to keep distance, social distance. From us from contracting the virus in the hospital, and how, you know, what would happen if there was an outbreak at the hospital? How
Dr.
would we be transported to the hospitals?
Thanks, Alexandra. Dr. Eitan, your thoughts in terms of trying to put pressure on local health agencies to try to heed federal and other county warnings?
Yeah, it's not my understanding that Napa joins the six Bay Area counties in their shelter-in-place order.
They actually just did. They actually just did, Dr. Eitan, and it will take effect at midnight.
Okay. So, first of all, I should actually give kudos to the six Bay Area or seven jurisdictions across the Bay Area that took very decisive action in issuing this order to shelter-in-place. So that includes Erica and particularly the leadership of Sarah Cody in Santa Clara County, who really did everything that they could early to try to prevent us from becoming an Italy-like situation. So that's bold leadership, and I just want to tip my hat to the health officers in the Bay Area. The issue of how to enforce this is a big issue. And so in the case of this Napa situation, which is being reported, my sense would be to get in touch with the Napa health officer and describe the situation that's being observed in this particular healthcare institution and encourage that health officer to make some inquiries into the leadership of that institution to find out if that institution is behaving in the most responsible manner under the circumstances.
And can you talk about just the unprecedented nature, Erica Pond, of all the counties coming together so quickly to issue what was really a dramatic change? You were asking the residents to make a dramatic change in their lives.
Yes, it was quite an amazing process. I mean, thankfully, we have a very strong regional collaboration in general. We have a larger Association of Bay Area Health Officials that includes actually 13 jurisdictions. As everyone knows, this situation has just been evolving so rapidly, and certainly basically at the end of last week and over the weekend, Santa Clara was seeing, and I believe San Mateo and San Francisco were seeing exponentially increasing cases, and we just, great leadership from Dr. Cody, they came together as well, and we're seeing just a dramatic increase and knowing that this is really the time, and we couldn't wait any longer, so we all spoke on, Sunday midday and managed to, we've been talking and slowly ratcheting down the social distancing. We were thinking, 3 days before that, I think we were going to issue an order of, gatherings less than 100, or only less than 50. And then we realized we really needed to intervene in a really dramatic way. But I was just, it was an amazing experience that we could all just come together and work with our county councils to come up with this order that we really tried to balance in a very quick time how to dramatically socially distance people but also allow people to have those essential activities to maintain health and safety in their homes and maintain essential businesses so that individuals can do that and, of course, our essential government functions. So it was an incredible experience. And then many have followed, as you have just mentioned.
The federal health official, Deborah Birx, said earlier this morning that we will, though, see an exponential increase in the number of confirmed cases now that testing is ramping up. So what can you tell our listeners in terms of how to interpret a significant increase in numbers as testing ramps up?
That's a great question, because that's absolutely true. As there are more availability of testing, we plan to see more numbers. I think we thought we would see them still at a slower pace and not necessarily exponential. And I think the other thing we'll be looking closely at is what proportion of testing are critically ill or hospitalized versus outpatient. And that's what will be really helpful once there is more testing available, and look at trends about, you know, among those tested, what percent are positive. So we're having a lot of conversations about that as well. But yes, I think some of this is the fact that we're actually looking for the disease and able to detect it, which we did not have that capability. And I think every week there is more, there are more labs that are becoming up and running to take on that capacity. So that is definitely part of the increase in numbers. So thanks for asking that question.
Are you seeing that?
I would also
yes,
add
go
that,
ahead, Dr. Eitan.
Yeah, I would also add that, you know, the action taken by these seven jurisdictions, the six health officers in Berkeley, will flatten the curve. And the goal is to flatten the curve. So we're not going to know how much effect we've had on the shape of that curve until we look back in retrospect. So while we will see an uptick in cases over the next few days and weeks, we hope that the rate of increase in retrospect will show that the action of these six jurisdictions saved lives, possibly in the hundreds, not just in the Bay Area, but also throughout the rest of the state. So the goal is to essentially manage the shape of that curve, to reduce the number of infections, to reduce the number of deaths, and to take the burden off the healthcare institutions so that we can actually treat the patients in a manner that doesn't exceed our capacity. So I do think that, unfortunately, because we got off to a late start in testing, some of our ability to sort of tie the surveillance to our actions was hampered. But in retrospect, we're going to see a flatter curve as a result of the actions taken by Bay Area health officials.
And so people shouldn't interpret an increase in the number of cases as that these measures are not working and that they don't necessarily need to be followed, but rather that, you know, this is a long-term situation where we're going to see ups and downs. One of the concerns, though, I have, Dr. Pond, is that we are hearing more about younger people who are getting seriously ill, though, of course, the threat of death remains highest among those over 60. We also saw reports that there are some children, particularly very young children, who are getting seriously ill as well, as more data comes from China. So as somebody who has worked in pediatric infectious diseases, how should we interpret that data coming out?
Sure. And I briefly want to just mention, I absolutely agree with Dr. Eitan about, you know, seeing the curve flatten. I want to manage expectations around thinking through the incubation period of this virus and knowing that we won't see the impact of our dramatic intervention for a week or two because of the incubation period of this virus. And then to speak to the increasing reports of sort of the millennial age group and pediatrics, I think, you know, some theories that are out there have to do with just the increased travel of an increased exposure of millennials. And just like with flu, we'll have to be looking at the overall rates per population. And there are some theories saying that maybe there wasn't as many reports of serious pediatric illness in China because there are less children per capita. So I'm still sort of digesting all this data as well. But certainly with influenza, we also see more severe disease in infants less than 1 year of age and in pediatric cases less than 5 years of age, along with the elderly. And it is true, early data coming out of China did not necessarily demonstrate that. But now, as we're seeing more across the world and more data, that is emerging as something to pay attention to.
Dr. Erica Pond, Alameda County Health Officer, thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it.
And Tony Eitan, Senior Vice President for Healthy Communities at the California Endowment. Really appreciate getting your insights as well this morning.
You're welcome, Mina.
And thank you to our listeners for their questions and comments. And unfortunately, we didn't have quite as much time as we would like, but we are definitely continuing to cover the coronavirus outbreak in the Bay Area. Stay with Forum for another hour. I'm Mina Kim.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.